And we're holding at the very top of your testament, Aleph. We learned yesterday the question, if you have potential edim for a get, but they don't know how to write their signatures, so we talked yesterday, not a lot back, that means they're illiterate per se, could just mean they don't know how to write Sapphos letters, as you're supposed to do in a get. So what do you do in order that they should be able to sign? So Rav had said that you do something with the paper, either makarim, which Rashi said meant you make mark, you engrave like the letters on the paper, kind of, and then the edim fill that in with ink. And Shmuel said that you can use lead, and we talked about the pros and cons of lead versus a lead solution. And then we talked about a couple of other possibilities, saliva, etc. So Tanya Kama said to Rav, we learn a braisa in accordance with Rav. Edim she'en yodin lachtem, if you have edim who don't know how to sign, mekanen lehen niyacholot, then you scratch, according to Rashi, or you make a stencil, according to Tosfos, on blank paper, or malon ha'koyim ziyoyin, and they fill up the scratches, according to Rashi, or the stencil, according to Tosfos, with ink. And the price continues, Amr of Shemin Gamliel, but Medvon Mamun, when is this talking about the Gittin Noshim? This only applies, we said at the bottom of Amr Aleph, this only applies to Gittin. Today we make a special exception because Mishum Igun, because we don't want the situation where this husband is getting ready to go on a long trip, or he's about to die and leave his wife a Shemeres Yavam or whatever it is, and therefore we need the get to be taken care of right away. But when it comes to documents of freeing slaves, of shtar kol hashtaris, or any other kind of shtar, he says, in yerdin literates v'lachtem, if they know how to read the shtar and to sign, chosman, only then can they sign. If not, then they can't sign. Wait till you can find another agent. These things aren't such urgent things that you should allow these kinds of exceptions. And as Gemara said on Amud Aleph, actually, if a Dayan does allow it, then he gets petch.
It was.
If a Dayan does allow Aiden to sign on other shtaris with this kind of thing without knowing how to sign properly, then that Dayan or... Get needs signatures, but therefore we're saying we're making an exception in order to make it possible for people who otherwise would be kosher to Aiden because they don't know how to sign, we will make marks on the paper, we'll make marks on the paper to guide them, or we'll make a stencil or whatever to guide them. They don't know how to sign in Sapphos letters. So what do you do? According to Rashi, then, what you're doing is you're scratching on the paper the outline of the letters, and then they're just filling that in with ink. Or according to Tosfos, you're making a stencil. You cut out
their name?
The letters of their name. Yeah, yeah. According to Tosfos, you take a blank piece of paper, you cut out you make cutouts of the letters of their name, a stencil, you put it over the paper that has the get on it, and they fill through that. So Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying you allow that for Gittin Noshim because of the problem of Igun. When it comes to other kinds of shtaris, only if the Edom know how to write and how to sign can they sign. If not, then not. The question is, Kriya Mandachashma. Who said anything about writing? The Tanakhama just said in the Braisa that if they don't know how to sign, then you do this Makarian business. He didn't say anything about reading. What's Rav Shimon Gamliel all of a sudden coming in and mentioning whether they know how to read or not? And just Chsurim Echsur, the Braisa is missing words. It means to say as follows. Edim Shein Yodin Likros, if the Edim don't know how to read the contents of the shtar, of the get, Koden Lefneim B'chosman, then you can read in their presence, you can read it to them, and then they can sign. Shein Yodin Lachdim, and if they don't know how to sign, then you do this Makarin. And then comes Rishim Gamliel, Bamed Romamur, B'gitin Nashim, that only applies to Gitin, we'll make both of these exceptions, that will allow other people to read them the content of the get, as well as that they can sign using a stencil or whatever. No, they need to know both. They need to know how to read it themselves, and they need to know how to sign it themselves. Then they can do that, and if not, then they can't sign it. Okay. Who is the halacha like? Amar Rav Elazar, my time is the Rav Shimon Gamliel. Well, before we get to the halacha, Amar Rav Elazar, my time is the Rav Shimon Gamliel. What is Rav Shimon Gamliel's reason to distinguish between Gittin and other shtaris? Like we just said, so that Jewish women won't be agunos. So this way, if the husband is about to leave on a long trip, for example, and he's in a hurry to leave, and he's going to leave his wife stuck because he may die overseas or whatever, and she'll never know what happened to him, or you have the situation where he's dangerously ill, and you need to get out of a situation where she's going to be a shemeres yavam, his brother may be young, and it'll be many years before they can do yavam. We'll learn about a case like that later in the Masechta. We learned about the yavamas. There could be a case where his brother is a meshumad or something. There can be all kinds of cases. Who's halacha? Like Amar Rava, halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So Rava says that indeed the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that we make these exceptions, both of these exceptions, when it comes to a get, but not to other shtaris. But I've gone to Mishmei. Rava, Amar ain halacha. The Rav Gamda says, on the other hand, no, the halacha is not like him. That, which sounds like it means then, that, that according to the Rabbanon, that we would, the halacha would be like the Rabbanon, but the same thing is taught by other shtaros as well. So the question is, the Ela commands to Rabbanon. So what are you saying? You mean the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but the halacha is like the Rabbanon? That if they don't know how to sign, you can do this. You can do this kriya business. You can do this, this scratching letters on the paper or stenciling or whatever, and allow them to sign. In all cases, with all shtaros, v'ha. But we see before how there was a dayan who allowed them to do this kind of thing with other shtaros, but nagdei Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana gave him malchus. Now, the obvious question is, so what? Rav Kahana holds. That's the question. That's the obvious question is, Rav Kahana is an Amora, Rav Gamda is also, Rav Gamda and Rav are also Rabbanon. They're entitled to disagree with Rav Kahana. The answer is, sometimes the Gemara will assume that a certain Amora is an Adam Gadol, he's a tremendously great Amora, head and shoulders above all the others. Therefore, what he did has a certain value of, as precedent, and we should assume that the other Amoraim are not arguing against him unless we have solid evidence otherwise. In this case, we should assume that which Rav Kahana this is, I don't know, there's many Rav Kahana, there's about a half a dozen Rav Kahanas in Shas, obviously must be one from the generations before Rava. But whatever it is, he's great enough that we can use what he did as a precedent to say, therefore, Rav Gamda and Rava are not going to be arguing with him. Some Mephoshim say it depends. Some Mephoshim say that it means he gave Malchus to the Dayan who authorized the aiding to do this. Doesn't matter, Barrett. We're not mean Malchus. And then Rav Kahana's times, whichever Rav Kahana it is, they didn't have he wasn't a member of the Sanhedrin anymore anyway. He couldn't. This is what's called a Makas Malchus. This is discretionary Malchus that a Beis Din can give somebody for not listening to the words of the Chachamim. So that's we find in a number of places in Shas that such things were done. So one way of looking at it. So even nowadays, technically, a Beis Din has that power, yes. So one possibility was the Dayan that he gave Petch. The other possibility is maybe it was the Aiden. So the bottom line is, so what are you telling me? They're saying that Halacha is like the Rabbanon, therefore, that with any Shtar, if the Aiden don't know how to sign it, they're allowed to sign it using these methods. We see Rav Kahana disagrees with that, and we should assume that they agree with Rav Kahana. The answer is Tirgum Akriya. You have to understand that what Rav Gamda is saying in the name of Rava is as far as the reading part. Meaning, you have, again, there's a double machlokus between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel. One by inference from the Braisa, do the Eidim have to be able to know to read the content of the Shtar or not? Number two, do they have to know how to sign? Rav Gamda is telling us in the name of Rava that Rav Gamda is saying in the name of Rava that the Halacha is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel as far as the reading. If the Eidim don't know how to read the Shtar, that's okay. We can have someone read it to them. But when it comes to the signing of the Shtar, they do not have to sign. Except in the case of Gittin, we'll make that exception and allow them to do it this way. Because of the situation of Eidim, yeah.
What happened was
they didn't know how to sign. And Rav Kahana allowed somebody, Rav Kahana scratched out, or not Rav Kahana, this Dayan scratched out letters on the parchment or cut out letters, whatever, and then, yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Mephoshim discussed the question, which we'll see a little bit about in these next couple of lines. Are we talking about that the Eidim don't know how to read it at all? Or maybe there are possibilities of it here. Maybe we're talking about that. Tosfos discusses it over here, among others, that maybe we're talking about... No, actually, Tosfos discusses something else. Never mind. Are we talking about they don't know how to read it at all? Or are we talking about maybe they're able to read it, they're just not fully able to understand it, especially, I mean, it's written in Aramaic, because it's not easy language. Or maybe they're able to read it, but they have a hard time reading it. They don't have good vision, let's say, or whatever, as in the next case that we have in the Gemara. Okay, but again, it can be written in any language, as we'll talk about soon, yeah. Okay. So Marcel, Rav Yehuda mitstar kori v'chosim. Rav Yehuda, when he had to sign a shtar, he would take the trouble to read it and then sign it. And it was troublesome for him because Rashi said Rav Yehuda was old at this point. His eyes were not functioning the way they should. So if he had to sign as an aide or as a dayan, he would take the trouble to carefully read it first, even though it was hard for him. He didn't have glasses. Glasses haven't been invented yet. Amalei Ola Lo Tzricha. So Ola tells him, actually, you don't need to do that. The heart of Olazo Mora de Eretz Yisrael, because we see Rav Olazo, who is the master of Eretz Yisrael, The Gemara explains, Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Nida, that he was called that because of his expertise in the halachos of Nida, in the halachos of Maris Dam, of knowing what shades of blood are Matame a woman and what aren't. But for that reason, he was called Mora Da'arid Yisrael, the master of Eretz Yisrael. So he, Koru Kamei V'chosim, they would read a shtar in front of him, and he would sign it, rather than him having to read it himself. But Rav Nachman, Koru Kamei Safra Dayani V'chosim, and also we find Rav Nachman, that the Sofrim of the Dayanim would read the shtar before him, and then he would sign. So therefore, you, Rav Yehuda, you don't have to trouble yourself. If it's too hard for you to read, then just have them read it to you. However, the Gemara says, "With Davkar of Nachman of Safri Dayani." However, this is only true of Rav Nachman of the case. For example, we had Rav Nachman and the Sofrim of the Dayani. That's allowed the Islahu Emsa because they fear him. Rav Nachman is a Dayan. Rashi explains he was a Dayan. He was appointed by the Reish Galusa, and he was the son-in-law of the Nasi, meaning the Reish Galusa. So therefore, the Sofer and the Dayanim are going to be afraid of him. They're not going to read anything that's not actually on the Shtar. So therefore, they're not going to lie. In other words, Abel Rav Nachman, the Safri Achrini. But if it was Rav Nachman and just some other Sofrim who don't work for the Beis Din, or Safri Dayanim, Inish Achrini, or it was a Sofrim of the Dayanim, but it's somebody else they're reading to, not Rav Nachman, like, then that won't work because then we can't be sure that they're actually reading what it says on there. They may be making up their own thing because they don't have Ema for him. Some of the Farshim also discussed the question over here. The Marshal and some others talk about, are we talking about then that you have to need two people to read it to him, or is it enough maybe if one person reads it to him? Another example of this business of reading a shtar, of signing a shtar without being able to read it. Rav Papa, if you have also the Kamei Shtara Parsa, when they would bring to Rav Papa a shtar that was written in Persian, the other Dar Kodesh Shokosim, and that had been prepared in Goyish Accords, which we learned about a week or two ago. He didn't know Persian. How does he know this? How does he know it's a valid shtar? How does he know what it says in it? What he would do is he would call in two goyims separately. He'd call in one goy, and ask him to read it. But not as I'm asking you this for the sake of eders. I'm asking you, read me please what it says in this shtar. I can't read it. Then this guy would leave, then he'd call another guy and have him do the same thing. So therefore, it came out, and therefore, if what they said matched, and then he would use it to collect even from Mishabadim. Because even though it was written in Persian and it was done in Goyish courts, it had, once Rav Papa knows from these two guys reading it independently and both coming with the same reading, that therefore what it says in the shtar must be correct, then therefore he would be able to use, he would say that the person who's owed the money in the shtar is able to collect even from the chasim b'shabadim. Even though usually we say that the chasim b'shabadim require that there's a coil, require that it's well known that the shtar was written and signed. So Rashi points out, we learned in the first parak that if you have a shtar that's written by Goyim and signed by Goyim, at most you can use it to collect from Bnei Chorin, from property that the borrower actually has right now, not from property previously sold. So why are we saying it here from Mishabadim? Rashi says the difference is there we were talking about a shtar that was done by Hedyotis, by plain unofficial Goyim. Therefore, there's no coil to it, and we're barely even sure. We said over there that it's valid as far as not having been forged or the whole thing be a lie or whatever. So fine. I mean, as the Gemara is saying, a few lines over here that which we had over there also that you know this is a shtar that was prepared according to the rules of Jewish shtaris. It's written on material that can't easily be erased and rewritten. It's written in the proper style, etc. So over there, all we can use it for is Bnei Chorin. Here, where it was prepared in a Goyish based in a Goyish court, therefore there's more of a coil to it, therefore you can use it even for Mishabadim.
But in a general sense, for things that are Mishabadim, cannot use Arkaz, so you can't...
No, you're not supposed to use Arkaz in the first place, you're supposed to do the Fnei and below the Fnei Akol. You're supposed to do court cases in front of Jews, not in front of Goyim. Here we could be talking about maybe this was a case between a Jew and a goy, so therefore it wound up in a goyish court. Maybe it was that situation where the Jew wanted to take the other Jew to Beis Din and he didn't want to go, and therefore we had to go to a court. Whatever it was, it doesn't really matter for our purposes. The point is, if it was done in an official goyish court, and actually saying that's what our Gemara is talking about over here, then you can use it even to collect from the Shabbatim. When you go to, when the lender goes to collect from third parties to whom the borrower had previously sold property, they can't claim, well, we didn't know that this loan took place, because since it was done in a goyish court, there is a kodel for it. It is well known that it was done, and therefore they should have been careful. As opposed to, in the first perek, when we talked about such a case, we were talking about the document came from Het Yotis. It was prepared by regular lay goyim. So then it doesn't have a curl, so then fine, as long as we know that it was written according to the proper style and everything, we can accept that it's a valid style, but there's no curl on it, therefore you can only collect from any curl.
It's supposed to be an halacha, when it's prepared by an achkara. It can be used from a shabbatim in general.
Well, that's what we're saying. However, having said that, though, this is Rashi's gear, so there are other Rishonim who have a gear set over here that actually umagribeim b'nei chori, that you can only use it to collect from b'nei chori, in which case it's exactly the same as in the first merit. But regardless whether it was done in Akkari, so whether it was done by Heviotis, the most you can use it for is B'nai Chorin, not Mishabadim.
So what's the final decision?
I'm not sure, actually. Omer Abashi, Omer Rehuna Bar Nosson, so Rabashi says that Rehuna Bar Nosson, who was the Reish Kabulsa in Rabashi's times, and was also a great Talmud Chacham, he told me that Hochi Omer Amemer, that Amemer in the previous generation said as follows: Hai Shtar Parsa, the Chesimei Alei Sadi Israel. If you have a shtar that's written in Persian and there are Jewish edim signed on it, so the previous case was it was written in Persian and it was signed by goyim. You were talking about it signed by Jews. So then, Magbin and Beve Mishati. Then we can use it for collecting from the Shabbatim. Not everybody agrees to. That all the Rishonim have the same
general in any foreign language.
Yes. But as long as it's signed by Jews. Wait. So the question is, and this is the same discussion that we had in the first parak, V'hola Yadim Mikri. The Jews who sign the Shtar, the Pashtus, they don't know how to read Persian.
Who do?
The answer is Yadim. The answer is okay. We're talking about where they do now.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. We talked about before that maybe the shtar could be rented. And no, here we're talking about that they themselves know. Okay, don't you have that the writing has to be done in such a way that it can't be falsified? No, not forged per se, but it can't be falsified. Meaning, in other words, for example, when it comes to a Jewish shtar, for example, there are rules. We talked about this in the first paragraph. There's rules that the words shouldn't be too spaced too far apart, for example, so you can't insert something in the middle over there. You have to be very careful. The Gemara gives a couple of examples in Rav Basra. You notice, for example, a vav that's squeezed in where there doesn't seem to have been enough room for it originally. It may have been added afterwards, all that kind of thing. Before, they're not being careful about that. And that is true also, but primarily what the Gemara is talking about over here, She'eni Yochel Izayef, is that you have to have the material, what's being written on, has to be something that if you erase it and rewrite it, it'll be noticeable. The answer is B'dafisan. Yeah, okay, so we're talking about that the parchment was prepared using gall nuts that we talked about yesterday, which therefore that makes the surface of the parchment, if you erase it now, that'll be noticeable. It'll be recognizable that it was erased and rewritten on as opposed to the rest of it. Okay. What about the fact that in a Jewish shtar you're supposed to have the content of the shtar summarized on the last line, like when we write in shtaris nowadays, a kanena, I'll call ma the kos of leil, and you don't have that in a Persian shtar. So you're right, so we made a kinyan about everything that it says before in the shtar. We talked about in the first paragraph, the reason behind it, in Lamed, in the Shita Achrona, that the last line is basically just there just to prevent anything false from being written in that last line, in the space between the end of the shtar and the edim. But therefore, Ein Lamed in Meshidach Reini. You can't learn, and you can't derive anything from that last line, because it's only there for that purpose. What if it was added afterwards? Persian shtaris, the Pashtus don't have that. They don't care about that. So then, wouldn't that be a problem? And the answer is, B'mahadir, okay, so we're talking about that the last line does repeat what the main part of the shtar said. B'mahadir, that it's repeated.
Okay.
No. Hadar in Aramaic means to return, like chazar in Hebrew. Okay, so the question is, well, in that case, if that's what it is, if we're talking about a Persian shtar, it's signed by Jews who know Persian, it's written on parchment that was prepared in a way that can't be erased and rewritten. You have shittach right now, so everything is done right except in a different language. So what's the chiddush? Elamai kamash malam. So what's the chiddush then? Bechol lashon kasher, that a shtar written in any lashon is kasher. Taneina, we learn later on in our masechta. Get shekofer ivris ve'edim yavanis. If you have a get that was written in Hebrew and the edim signed in Greek, these are Jews who sign in the Greek language, or yavanis ve'edim ivris, or the other way around, they were the get that's written in Greek and the edim signed in Hebrew, kasher. Actually, the Ramban brings up a possibility that maybe Ivris over here doesn't mean Hebrew, as in the common Hebrew letters that we use nowadays, but rather Ivris as in Ksav Lebunah, as in the ancient script that they used in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, as they used on coins and whatnot in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash.
Ksav
Ivris. It's also called Ksav Lebunah. Lebunah. That's two names. Ksav Ivris, Ksav Lebunah, Ksav Ras. Yeah, those strange ones that you find. Yeah, that you find. And we were talking a few weeks ago, for example, about that seal of Chizkiyahu that they found. Yeah, so that writing. Anyway, so you see from that that yeah, get can be written in English, or shtar in general can be written in any language. The answer is imahi ha'aminahani milu gittin. Exactly. If we only had that Mishnah, we would think maybe that's only a heter as far as gittin. Av b'shar shtaris loy. Maybe it doesn't apply to other shtaris. Kamash v'lon. That is what Ameimar is telling us, and Ravuna bar Nosson is reporting that it's true by other shtaris as well.
From that brush, so we find.
No, not from
from Ameimar.
Well, Ameimar is telling us that it applies there. Ameimar is an Amar. Okay. Omer Shmuel. Nosson lo niyar cholak. What if the husband gives the wife a blank piece of paper? V'amal ha'ariz a gittin. And he says to her, this is your get. Migurashes. Then she's divorced. Why? Chashinin. Shemimim milim kosra. Because maybe he wrote it with water that gallnuts were soaked in, which we learned on Amud Aleph, that creates an ink. That creates sort of a disappearing ink. It persists for a while, and then it disappears. It gets absorbed into the paper or the parchment or whatever. So like this, maybe it was written at the time, and now it's gone. It wasn't Mesir. I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Harezik Gittich, if the husband says to his wife, here's your get. When talatu v'zarachtu l'yam, she took it and threw it into the water, or the ur, or into the fire, or the choldav over, or anything else that it destroyed. V'chaz of omer, and then the husband turns around and says, actually, that wasn't a get after all. Shtar pasim hu, shtar amona hu. This was actually a shtar pasim or shtar amona. Shtar pasim, Rashi, we learned about them in Sukkos. We learned about them in Sukkos, but Rashi quotes it over here. Shtar pasim is, you tell somebody who's a good friend of yours, write me a shtar that I owe you X amount of money, not that I really do, but this way I can show it to people and people will think that I'm rich. That's called shtar pasim. Shtar amana is you write a shtar saying I'm planning to borrow money from you, therefore I'm writing this shtar in advance and I'm giving it to you, but I trust you, I have amana, I have amuna in you that you're not going to use it against me inappropriately. Now we don't consider this, you're not supposed to have such stories. Al pashtim by alacha avli, you're not allowed to have injustice in your house. You're not allowed to have a shtar pasim or shtar amana. But in this case, the husband gave her what he said was a get. She threw it into the fire. Now the husband says, actually, it wasn't a get. I was kidding around. It was a shtar pasim or shtar amana. What? That's the question. And so the Braisa says, in Gureshet, we consider that she's divorced, v'loy kol ha'men or lo'istra, because he doesn't have the ability to, we don't trust him to say that, that she's still author. Once he gave it to her to begin with and said, ha'rez a gittich, then that's it. We don't trust him now that it's gone to say it wasn't really a get after all.
Why do we we trust him enough to say it was a get. We don't trust him to say it's not a get.
Because Tosfos says one thing is because when first of all, Bechlal, if a husband says I divorced my wife, he has the ability to divorce her. Remember, before Chaim Deber and Gershom, a husband can divorce his wife unilaterally.
Sure.
So therefore, Bechlal, if a husband comes and says I divorced my wife, we'll believe him.
Right.
Similarly, over here, when he first came and said Harez a gittich,
right,
then we take him at his word that it's a get.
Yep.
Afterwards, he's claiming that it wasn't. Tough luck.
Why?
Because at that point, he doesn't have Nemonis anymore. His Nemonis extends to the idea of saying
he should have more Nemonis if we believe that he was a get to begin with in the first place. In the first place, we believed him.
We believed him that it was a get. Now it's gone, so
why shouldn't we believe him in the second place?
Because we don't. Because we believe he has Nemonis to say that he has Nemonis to say I divorced you. He doesn't have Nemonis after he gave what was supposedly a valid get to turn around and say, you know what, it wasn't valid. That's one answer Tosfos gives. Then Tosfos gives another answer. That, yes, there were Edom over here, and the Edom read it, because we just said before the Edom are supposed to read a get before it's signed. What happened, though, that it's similar to the Gemara is going to give this answer in a little bit and in connection with further in this discussion. Suppose that the husband gave the get to the Edom, they read it, Then, before we were talking about the Edom reading it before they sign it. Here we're talking about something else. Here we're talking, the Edom are supposed to read the get before it's given over, before it's handed to the wife.
After they sign?
After, not necessarily the same Edom. But whichever Edom it's being given, the Edom and Sira are supposed to read it before it's handed over. Now, in this case, the husband gave it to them, they read it, then he gave it to her, she threw it in the fire. I'm missing one part, sorry. So he gave it to them to read. Then he put it in his sleeve, or in his pocket, or whatever. He pulls it out, gives it to her, says, Hareza Gitzich. She throws it in the fire, and then he says, actually, while it was in there, I swapped it out with another one. No, so we don't believe that. We don't believe him. We don't believe him with that. Even if if he pulls out another get, that's different, I guess. But if he doesn't, then yeah.
Okay. So if he pulls out another get,
if he pulls out another, then that might be similar to a case we'll talk about soon involving mezuzahs, right? Okay. So time of the hikasav. Now why is this the case? Because there was at least writing on there. Halakasav loy. Evidently, the Braisa is saying, because after all, what the Braisa is talking about a case where there was obviously writing on it, and he's claiming instead of that it was a get, that it was a shtar pasim or shtar amana. But it sounds like if you were to give her a blank piece of paper, nothing would happen. So why is Shmuel saying Gudashis, that maybe there was Maimilin written on there? By the way, another possibility that Mephoshim bring up is maybe the agent didn't read it, but they saw that there was writing on it, and then he gave it to her, and now he's claiming after it was burnt that it was a Shtar Pasim or Shtar Amana, as opposed to the case that Shmuel is talking about. That's the question. The Braisa seems to be implying that as long as the Edom saw writing on it, then it's good. Then we assume that when he said first Hareza Gitzich, that's valid, and afterwards he's just trying to.
I didn't read what was on the
Shtar. So that's the thing. So that's
to imply that they read it.
No, that's so. According to Tosis, it implies that they read it. But the other possibility is maybe they saw there was writing on it.
According to who?
I don't remember. There are Rishonim who were going that way. Okay. Anyway.
He said.
Fine. Okay. That doesn't mean they had to have read it before the Mesira was done. The Edech Sima read it before it was signed.
In front of these idioms?
No, it doesn't have to be in front of these agents.
So how did they say Gitech? They
I don't understand. He didn't say Hareza Gitech. He said. The husband said Hareza Gitech. They're just watching.
Yeah.
So they said, we saw him give her a piece of paper that had writing on it. She threw it in the fire. Now he's claiming that it was a Shtar Pasim or Shtar Amana. So we say we don't believe him on that. We go according to the original thing. However, that's only if there was writing on it. Halachic Sav Loi, but if there's no writing on it, then evidently not. The answer is Kikvam or Shmuel. You know what Shmuel's talking about? It's about Tkinin Lava Maya Denora. What we have to do with this supposedly blank piece of paper, we have to test it using water of Nara. So what is that? Rashi explains it's some kind of dye. A couple of other Mephoshim explain that it means pomegranate. That it means juice from the peel of a pomegranate. Whatever it is, it has the property that if you put some of it on the paper that has potentially invisible ink on it, that Maimilin, it'll make the letters come out again. So therefore, you test it with that. Pull it. If it makes the letters come out, then good, they came out. And if it doesn't, if nothing comes out, then you know it's nothing. Mephoshim have several different ways of explaining what the Gemara is saying over here. Are we saying that if you tested it and found that obviously before it was burnt, and found that there's something on it, then yes, but if not, but if you didn't test it at all, then there's no reason to think that it was a get. Or is it even before testing it, even let's say it got burned or whatever, and you didn't have a chance to test it, then we still consider that it might have been a get because it may have had Maimilin on it. Or do you have to test it? Several different approaches that Mephoshim take on this.
What do they conclude on this?
It's not a conclusion. I mean, there's a machlokus between the Mephoshim on it. So that's the question, basically. When we say about Kinnin Lava Maya Denora, are we saying that you have to test it with Maya Denora, or are we saying if you tested it and it came, the letters came out, then yeah. Okay, the question is, if you pull it Maya, so what if the letters come out after you treat it with Maya Denora? Hashtahu to pull it. It only came out now. At the time when he gave it to her, there was no visible writing on it. So what if later on you bring out the latent writing? It wasn't, it didn't exist at the time. That's fine, but when he gave it to her, it was already absorbed. There's no writing. How can we possibly consider that again? The answer is Shmuel Nami Chayshinin Kama. You're right. Shmuel is just saying that we have to be concerned that when he gave it to her, maybe the writing wasn't fully absorbed yet. Now, when she checked it a while later, or the agent checked it a while later, they found it blank. Maybe at the time he gave it to her and said, how did you get this? Maybe the writing was still visible on it. Therefore, we have to be concerned, not that we'll say she's fully divorced, she's going to need a proper get after that, but we have to be concerned at that point she suffered from a gurdashas. If she's a wife or a kohen, she can't eat truma at that point. If he dies at that point, then she's going to be chalitza, not yibum, etc. Which also Mefarshim discussed the question: are we saying now that are we going back on the Tosfos says that actually what it's, in that case then given this chayshin and kamar it doesn't really matter whether we test it or not. In other words, the Gemara is giving two possible answers. One is we test it with Maya Denara. The other is even if we don't test it, then it's just chayshin and kamar. Other Mefarshim say that no, it's not the Gemara is not retracting its original answer. It's continuing with it. After it was tested, and you find there's lettering on it, so the fact that the lettering wasn't visible beforehand, that makes a chash, that maybe when he gave it to her it was considered a valid gift. Right, basically. Interesting thing, by the way, as far as this whole business of latent writing, and then afterwards it comes out, is one of the sources that's brought in halacha as far as the whole business of, for example, you're allowed to erase a recording that has the Eder's name in it. They talk about that in terms of this. The writing, what's effectively the writing, the magnetic pulses or whatever on the tape, is latent until you have a machine to be able to read it. So therefore, it's not considered writing based on our Gemara over here.
Wow. Yeah.
No, and it doesn't matter whether she wants it or not. Once you received it, a guest. Again, before Chaim Der Ben Gershom, you don't need her agreement. No, okay. When you have two people that a get was written in their, that was given in their presence, they have to read it. Oh, that's before when we were talking about according to Shmuel, according to the Mefarshim who say that Shmuel's case over here with the invisible ink was talking about where the Edom didn't read it. The case where he claimed that it's Shtaramon or Shtarpasim. That Braisa might not be holding, like for Jimmy, that the agent, the Siddha, have to read it before it's given. Yeah. Anyway, so we're saying that Hani Beitrei, Yav Gitzakadura, Gitzakamayu, two Edom that a get was given in their presence, Sichel the Mikriye, they have to read it before it's given. Let's just discuss that technically it should be read before and after the giving, but if you don't read it after the giving, it's certainly still kosher. The Gemara says, Mace, we have a contradiction. The same Braisa that we quoted before. I read the Gita, and he says, here's your get. When Talatu is Rakatu the Yak, she took the get and threw it into the water, or the Ur, or the fire, or the Choldavar of it, or any place else where it's destroyed. Because of Amashtar Pasim, or Shtaramon, or Mugurashis. The Loy Kalahimen, or Loisra. He doesn't have the ability to answer her. Now, the Yamit, Tzrich Lemikri, if you're going to say that they have to read it, Bosu de Chayurmi, Motzi Amalachi. After they read and said that it saw that it was a valid get, how did they even have the possibility of saying that it was Shtaramon or Shtar Pasim? The answer is Loy Tzricha. So here's where we use the same answer that Tosfos brought before in the previous part of the Gemara, is that we're talking about a case. After they read the get, he put it into his sleeve, the Afe, and then he pulled it out and gave it to her. So you might think he could claim that he switched it with a Shtar Amon or a Shtar Pasim. Come on, we're not worried about that. Now, so you're asking what happens if he actually afterwards pulls out another get? Good question. I don't know. Maybe in that case.
Probably not.
Then no, in that case, that could very well be that maybe you could say that he did switch them and then he gave her a first the shine.
Well,
we don't know.
They could all be
getting, that's true.
Kind of
this is also true. Okay. Another case. There was a case of a man who threw a get to his wife and it landed among the barrels, which we'll learn later on in the second. That's a valid way of giving a get, is you throw it and it lands in her property. Not necessarily, well, her Abamas is if they're in the city of Rosh Hashanah, if they're next to Rosh Hashanah, but if it lands, for example, in her house or her yard or whatever, that also works. We'll learn about it later on in Ayin.
She
could have her own property. Actually, we'll talk about it a little more on Chalfam and Aleph in connection with the fact that the wife is supposed to pay for the writing of the get. So yeah, how does she come to have property of their own? And so first of all, one possibility is, yes, that she can have property of her own. But besides that, Mefarshim point out, a lot of times when a get is written, it means that beforehand the husband and wife weren't getting along. Fine, you can have cases where a get is written over here out of love for her to prevent her from being a Shemeres Yavam or whatever, but more often it's out of friction. Well, then, during that period of friction before that, he probably hasn't been giving her bezonis or whatever. Therefore, she's been keeping her own mighty again. Huh? So then, fine. So she has the property of her own.
I'm going to say that his own property, but it's not a Kenya factor. It's because.
So let's wait until we get to that in a couple of months, Baz Hashem. We'll be going exhaustively through this whole business. Okay. So he threw her this debt. It landed among the barrels of wine. Ishtakach mezuzah. Then they went to look for it, and they pulled out from there a mezuzah. So what is it? Is it maybe that he didn't throw her a debt? Maybe he threw her a mezuzah? Amar Rav Nachman, mezuzah bein edani l'shlicha. It's not common to find a mezuzah among the barrels. So yes, there is really reason to suspect over here that what he threw her was actually a mezuzah, not a get, even though he said harei zegitzich. However, v'hanim mezuzah ishtaka chada. This is only true if you only find one thing over there. Ava tout ava beiz gimel. But if you find two or three scrolls over there, and you know he only threw her one, then you should assume differently. Then you should assume that since this one mezuzah was there, then there may well have been other ones over there also. The gita, and what about the get, which supposedly was thrown there? You could say that maybe mice dragged it away. But the fact that you don't find a get there doesn't prove anything. So Rashi doesn't say in so many words, but he seems to be implying, and this is how some of the Farshim learn Rashi, that he means to say in that case, we would say she's vadag megureshes. The Rambam and most other Rishonim say means she's sopik megureshes. The fact of the matter is we still don't know. Maybe there were two mezuzahs there and he threw a third one and there was never any get there in the first place. But maybe not. Maybe what he threw her was an actual get and there were already three mezuzahs over there and the mice took away the get. Therefore, again, it's a sopik.
They took away the get.
They couldn't send them out of the way. It's also, but we can only go based on what we see. If we only see...
Why would you say they only took away the get, not away the mezuzah? It's going to be that they took away both.
Fine, but the fact of the matter is, we know that he only threw her one thing. We find two or three things there, so obviously at least one of them was there before.
Okay.
Yeah. Another case. Havu Gavra the Allah Beit Nishta, a certain man once went into a shul, shokol Sefer Torah, Yahiv Lalad Vei, so he takes out a Sefer Torah and hands it to his wife, and he says, here is your get. Omer of Yosef, son of Yosef says, obviously there's not a problem. What exactly should we be concerned about? Is there maybe, you're thinking the possibility that maybe he took Mein Milin and wrote on the back of the Sefer Torah, or wrote on the back of it the text of the get, and now it's in Mein Milin and it's invisible again. So what's the problem? Ein Mein Milin, I'll gather Mein Milin. The class of the Sefer, the parchment of the Sefer Torah is treated with gold nuts to make that if you erase the letters, it'll be noticeable. No, both sides. The parchment when you soak the skin in this mixture, in this solution to make it into parchment, the whole thing goes in there. So yeah, if one side is treated with hafaf, then the other side effectively is also. So ein milin, mei milin, agave mei milin. So writing with mei milin on that is not going to be effective. It's not going to be. It's never going to be visible. If you're going to argue the problem is the fact that the Torah says, the Torah has in it, the parasha of Gittin, and it uses the words over there, v'chosav sefer krisus, that the husband writes a sefer krisus, a document of divorce, for his wife, and you're going to argue maybe that's enough for it to be considered a valid get, at least on a Madaraisa level. What's the problem? But in the cause of law, l'shma v'laka. A get has to be written l'shma, and here you don't have it. The sefer wrote it years ago, not having this couple in mind. V'chi tema, so you might say, leichush dilma akim v'yav lezuzah l'safra me'ikra. So you might argue that maybe when the sofer was writing the Sefer Torah, when the husband realized the sofer is getting to Parashas Ki Tse, he's getting close to this part of gets to of the cause of the Sefer Krisus, he gave him a zuz and said, write that part having me and my wife in mind.
That's good enough.
You would think, but maybe you could. Rabbi Yosef is arguing. What when the Gemara is bringing up this possibility, it sounds like we're saying there might be a suffix. What is there a possibility? Maybe we should think that that's the problem. Well, the answer is halva inin shina shma shma v'shem ira v'leka. Yes, but you have to have that a get has to have his name and her name and the name of his city and the name of her city, and you don't have any of that. The word Shina over here, Rashi says, doesn't really belong over here because we're not talking about changing it. We're talking about that there's no names written in there at all. Okay, Rashi says, since the Mishnah uses the expression Shina, Shmoy, etc., so therefore the Gemara quotes it in those words. But Tosfos and many others have shown him discuss the issue over here. Is this requirement to write the names and the cities in there? Is it the cities is definitely the Rabbanon. The name, is it Daraisa or the Rabbanon? Some of the Farshim learn, some of the Shanim learn that it's Daraisa, that the names have to be written in there. and therefore if there's no names written in there, the Gemara is saying it's possible Madaraisa even. Others say that it's only required in Rabbanan, but still, the Gerushin require that it's done according to Takana Chachamim. So if there's no names written in there, then maybe it would be Kosher Daraisa, but it's possible Rabbanan. So again, what's the potential problem?
Christus implies that you know exactly who it is.
I believe the Ramban, I think the Ramban uses that sort of that, yes, because because of, let's say, the Christus, at least you have to have the names in there in order to know who's divorcing who. Okay. Well, it has to be, as we'll talk about soon, that the get belongs to the husband before he gives it to the wife. So actually, before I should point out, when he gives him the zuz, it's not only to write it in the shmoy, it's also that he should be makne him that part of the parchment that the get is written on, that the words say for Christus are written on. How would it possible it? So therefore, so obviously there's no possibility of it being a get. So then the question is, Rabbi Yosef Maikamash Malon. So what, in that case, what is Rabbi Yosef? These things are all very obvious. A parasha in the Torah is not a get. So what is Rabbi Yosef trying to tell us? He's trying to tell us exactly that. In Mei Milim, I got a Mei Milim. You should know this concept that Mei Milim cannot be validly written on top of Mei Milim and it be a valid get, even a possibility of it. Since a Sefer Torah is made with Milim, is made with these gulnuts, the parchment of a Sefer Torah is made with gulnuts, then therefore automatically there can't possibly have been any Mei Milim on it. That's what Rabbi Yosef wants to inform us.
Is that a physical reality?
It's a physical reality. In other words, if you have parchment that's treated with milin, and then you write on it with main milin, there'll never be a time when that writing is visible. That's what's written on the back of the Sefer Torah. Omer of Chista. Get shekosver shaloi l'shma. If you have a get that was written not in the name of the husband and wife, Hever all of coolness l'shma, then the sofer takes the pen and traces over the existing letters with new ink and does that l'shma. Banu l'machlokas Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan. In that case, then that would bring us to the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan as far as the Sefer Torah. Tanya, Hareisha ha'yitzarech lichtav as Hashem. Suppose that you have a sofer gets to a point where he's supposed to be writing the name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke. V'niskaven lichtav Yehuda. However, he mistakenly thinks that he should be writing the word Yehuda over there. And then he made a mistake and forgot to put the Dalit in. So it comes out, in other words, he wrote the name Yudke Vovke, but not having in mind the Avishtha's name. What do? You're supposed to have in mind L'shem Kedushas Hashem before you write the Avishtha's name. So, Ma'avol of Kulmas Makache Divir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says then what you do is you just trace over the letters with new ink, and then before you do that, you're Makadosh it. You have Yudke Vovke written over there, that was written Shaloi L'shma. Instead, you dip in your pen, you start writing again over the existing lettering, Yud, K, Vav, K, and before that, you say, I don't any courage that I'm doing it, Hashem, Kedushas Hashem.
According to
Rabbi Yehuda. V'chachamim, en Hashem en Amukha, where the Chachamim say, that's not the ideal way to write the Eberstein name.
Meaning, what, it's not kosher, what do you think?
So, the Mephorot, the Rishonim, and the Achronim all talk about Do the Chachamim mean to say that this is not the proper way to do it, but the Eved it'll be okay? Or do they mean to say that this is possible altogether?
The answer is,
in Shulchan Aruch it says that it's possible altogether. The Aruch HaShulchan brings, I don't know if everybody agrees to this. He says that since the name was written without having in mind the Kedusha, then therefore it doesn't have Kedusha, and therefore you can erase it and rewrite it. I believe there are other poskim who say, if I remember correctly, Kesta Sefer says this, that what you would actually have to do is cut out that part that has the Abish's name and put a patch on and then write the Abish's name with the proper kavana. By the way, why the Gemara is mentioning, why the Braise is telling over here such a convoluted case where the guy meant to write Yehuda and then forgot the Dalid, rather than just say more simply that he wrote the name, he knew he next has to write the name Yudke Vovke, but he didn't have in mind the Shem Kedusha Hashem. So the Pnei Yeshua talks about it. He says basically the Pnei Yeshua, the Ravaz, talk about it. That do we mean that only in this case would it be a problem? Whereas if he wrote Yudke Vovke without having in mind Kedushas Hashem, but he knew he was supposed to be writing it, and then even the Chachamim would agree maybe that you can write over it. It's only in this case where he meant to write a different word and just left out the Dalet. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is it could mean either way, but it could mean either case. But we're giving an example over here because even over here where he meant to write the word Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda would still say that it's okay to write over it.
What about the letters sitting apart with the word, or is it basically at the
summit? I think, if I remember correctly, when I looked in the Aruch HaShulchan, he says that even if you do it during the during writing the last letter of the word, then it's okay. I mean, the Hachilah, it should be before you write any of the letters. Okay, so therefore, by the same logic, therefore, by a get, it should be the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda should say it's okay to write over the Shema, and the Chachamim should hold it's not. Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, do maloyi, but Rav Acha bar Yaakov says maybe not. The difference is, in the case of the Sefer Torah, why do you have to write the Hatchilah with the Eibishter's name in mind and not write over it? Because you need Zekei Levan Veyu, you need to make the mitzvah beautiful, the letter, and you don't have that. For one thing, the Gemara points out later on, we're going to have a sugya about this in another month or so, about the business of writing the Eibishter's name, Lashma, that if you have names of the Eibishter which are double written, over it's written over the existing writing, it's going to look, those parts are going to look different than the rest of the writing in the Sefer Torah. It's called menumer. It's like spotted. It doesn't look nice. Avalcha haloi, but in the case of a get, that's not an issue. So even the Chachamim might agree by a get, it's fine. But we don't know for sure whether it's the same machlokas. Now, Tosfos previously on your test brings the question. We had the case over there where you had Ksav Agav Ksav. You had the situation over there that Rish Lakish asked Rav Yochanan, what about if you're writing ink on top of red paint, or red paint on top of ink, or ink on top of ink, etc. So one thing we said over there is Joy Agav Joy. If you have ink on top of ink, then it's Potter in Hilchos Shabbos. Why are we saying Potter outright over there when we're saying over here that it's Machlokes Rav Yehuda and Chachamim? So Tosfos makes the distinction that the difference is over here in our case on Chof, we're talking about originally the name was not written Lashma, now it's being written Lashma. Rabbi Yehuda would say the fact that you're having a new Kavanah over here, which improves that before it was not Kosher, the name of Hashem, and now it is, therefore that has significance as it can be considered writing. The case where we're talking about on your text, where word was already written, and you're just writing over in ink. You're not adding anything by adding that ink. The word was a word before that also. Therefore, the Gemara just took it for granted. That's the point. Before, we're talking about just any word, which doesn't need any special kedusha or whatever. Here, we're talking about where you have to have it in mind, and you didn't have in mind the first time, and you do the second time. So there, Rabbi Yehuda says that's considered ksiva. But when you're just tracing over a word and not adding anything, then even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that not. There's different other possibilities that the Mefarshim bring up, including maybe that Gemara indeed disagrees with this one over here. Okay. Okay. Omer of Chista. Yechilnu lemefsalinu lekula gitta d'alma. I'm capable of parceling all the gittin that are written in the world. Well, what's the point? Well, it is, but so he means, in other words, I see a potential problem with the way that all gittin are written. Actually, Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father, has an explanation about it of the Kabbalah. Given that gerushin gittin involves separation of husband and wife, which is generally speaking a negative thing, then Reb Chisto, who represents Chesed, as his name indicates it, says, if I have the ability to make it that there should not be any gerushin, that husbands and wives always stay together. Well, he's going to say, okay. And then he continues that over here, that Rava is the one who disagrees with him, because he explained after Kabbalah that Rava comes from Bina, which Bina is on the Gvura side of things, so therefore Rava is the one who says, no, there's got to be Gvura in the world, there's got to be Gittin. So Amale Rava, my time, why are you saying that all Gittin would be possible? You're going to say, because the Pasuk says the husband has to write the get, which means either to write it himself or to pay for the sofer to write it, and here the wife is the one who's having it written, because the Gemara in Baba Basra, the last parak,
she has it written.
So the Gemara in Baba Basra, in the last parak, goes through, listen, let me explain. The Gemara in the last parak of Baba Basra goes through, the Mishnah actually, goes through with various kinds of shtaris, who pays for the writing of the shtar. When it comes to, for example, when Reuven is borrowing from Shimon money, who pays for the writing of the shtar, Reuven or Shimon? When you have all different kinds of shtaris that are possible. Now, when it comes to a get, the Mishnah says over there that the woman is the one who pays for the writing of the get. And the reason is, actually, because of Igun. Because you can have a situation, if we made the husband pay for the get, he may stall. I don't have the money, whatever, I'm too cheap to, whatever. Therefore, we say, let the woman pay for it. And that way, it'll get done.
He can pay, though.
Once you have the Tachanas Chacham, it sounds like she's supposed to pay. If he wants to reimburse her for it afterwards, fine. But Anyway, so you're going to argue then, Rav Chisda, that the problem is the Torah implies the husband has to write the get. Here the wife is having it written, so therefore you're going to argue with Fossil. What's the problem? Maybe the Rabbanan are being makne this money that she's paying the sefer. The Rabbanan are being makne to him, and they have the ability to do that. Hefker based in Hefker. They have the ability to expropriate that money from her and give it to the husband. So then she gives it to the sefer, but the Rabbanan are making it consider that zuz actually goes from her to the husband, and then the husband gives it to the sefer.
The advantage
is that way we have both. She's paying for it in order to avoid the problem of Igun, like we said, but he's paying for it to the positive of a chosav. So how can he say the get is possible because of that? And by the way, when he says with Dilma, when he says with Dilma, doesn't mean maybe. The fact is that that's how it is. Robert is saying with Dilma out of respect to the Chista. I don't want to outright say you're wrong. I'm your Talmud after all. He's a son-in-law also, but maybe.
So
you're going to say maybe another problem with it, that the pasuk says v'nosan, he has to give her the get, which implies that it has to, giving usually implies giving something of a certain minimum value, a pruta. And here, what he's giving her is not necessarily worth a pruta. Fine, but that's an intangible thing. The Chassam Sefer asked him, isn't the parchment at the very least worth more than that? He gives an interesting answer. When you get down to it, remember, once a get is written, with certain names on it, nowadays they rip it up as a practical matter because you don't want Shalei Lahitzi Laz, but even in those times, she could keep it. But once it's written with a certain person's name, with a certain couple's name, and remember, it has to be written Lashma, it can never be used for any other couple. It has no intrinsic value. Until it's given, it has no intrinsic value. All it's useful for is, if it never gets given, it's not like any other couple could ever use it. All it's useful for is to wrap a bottle with or something. So therefore, it can be worth less than a prutah. The shtar there doesn't have to be worth a prutah even. Because there doesn't say anything about Vinosa. We learn the fact from Shtar, we learn it from a Hekesh, the Yotza V'Hoysa, that it were once again. If Gerushin can be done with a Shtar, then Kedushin can also be done with a Shtar.
What did you acquire her at that point? How
did you acquire her? Because it's a Chosav that you can acquire over the Shtar. Anyway, so you're going to argue then that Nosan implies the Shtar has to be worth a minimum value, and it isn't necessarily. So what's the problem? Dilma nesinas geti. Maybe the word v'nosan does not mean giving something of value. Maybe it just means the handing over of the get, regardless of the value of it. Teda, and in fact, you can prove that that's the case, that a get does not have to have any minimum value. The shochu mitam, because they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael, kosval is surana kosher, that if you write a get on something which is also b'ana, then it's kosher, even though that object is not worth anything, because it's also b'ana, you can't have any ana from it. Nevertheless, it's kosher. So you see that a get doesn't have to have any minimum value.
Like a pig skin?
A pig skin is not also b'ana.
It's not also b'ana, it's also b'achila.
Then you're not allowed to do business with Yisodah Ana, but you're not allowed to do business with Yisodah Achila. But if you happen to have, if it came, you deal in skins, and one day somebody brought you a pig skin, you're allowed to sell it. No, Yisodah Ana, for example, would be Chametz on Pesach, Kalaya Kerem, the things from Avodah Zarah, etc. There is, by the way, a bit of discussion. The Gemara is going to discuss soon this whole business about the Gemara is going to discuss now this business about Yisodah Ana. But actually, one distinction that some Rishonim say is there might be a difference whether this Yisodah Ana is something that has to be burnt or not. If it has to be burnt, then you could argue that it's considered as if it's already burnt. Therefore, it can't be a valid get. Mashenkin, if it's also Ba'ana, but it doesn't have to be burnt. It can be buried or whatever, or you just can't have enough from it, then maybe that's what we're saying here, that could be valid. Okay, Gufer, getting back to what we said, Shochem Itam, they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael, Kosver Ali Surah Na Kosher, that if you write a get on something which is also Ba'ana, it's kosher. Amar Ravashi, Afanan Nami Tanena. As a matter of fact, Ravashi says we can learn that from what it says in our Mishnah. We said in our Mishnah, Ola Shaldayis, that you can write a get even on an olive leaf, which even though an olive leaf is worthless, or is almost worthless, you can write on it. So you see that the get doesn't have to have a minimum value. This is why. Dilma shiny Ola Shaldayis, the chazul leaf syrupi. No, because an olive leaf might be different. You get enough olive leaves together. Yes, each one individually is worth next to nothing. You get enough of them together, you have enough to feed an animal, you have enough to stuff a pillow or whatever. But that's the point. In other words, it's like those coupons that say cash value 1/100 of 1 cent, right? In principle, you get 100 of them together, you have 1 cent. So the same thing over here. You get enough all of these together, you know, as opposed to we still don't have enough. You know, yeah, 100 zeros is still zero, right? You know? Yeah.
Depends where the dot is.
Yeah. Tanya, Rebbe, Omer, Kosvei al Surah, no kosher. We learned in a Braisa that Rebbe said if you wrote a get on something that's also about another, that's kosher. Nofak Levi, Darshan Meshmeh the Rebbe. So Levi one time went out and Darshan his halacha in the name of Rebbe, Veloy Kil Suha, and they didn't praise it. They didn't accept this halacha. Because he only said in the name of the Yochid. This that you can write it on his Surah. Meshmeh the Rabbim, Vikil Suha. Then he said it again in the name of the Rabbim, and they accepted it. Alma Hilchse Kavaseh, which shows that the halacha is like him. So Rashi says the proof is the fact that Levi went to the trouble, he was so concerned to make sure that people will accept this as halacha, that shows that it's halacha. Tosfos says differently. The fact that we see that the people did not accept it when he said it in the name of Rebbe, because why didn't they accept it? Because they said, you're saying in the name of a Yochid, implying that's not halacha. You have to say it in the name of a Rabbim, and then we know that it's halacha.
Rabbi means how many?
No, Rabbi means the majority, the Chachamim in general. When the Pasuk says you have to write the get, means not engrave it. So it means, you know, the pastures it sounds like, if you were to take a wooden board, let's say, or a stone or whatever, and start carving out the letters in it, then it would be possible. Question is, remember the Chakik al activity. So you're telling me that engraving is not considered writing? Well, Rabino, I have a contradiction. Eved Shayatu the Ksav Shagav Tablo Pinkas. If an Eved comes with a writing, if an Eved goes free using writing that was engraved on a tabla, on a board, or Pinkas, or on a notebook, Pinkas actually is a Shlosh Pinkas in hand, let me say, in the Mishnah for a yard site. Pinkas in those days was generally speaking two boards. That there was a folding board, which usually what you do is we say in the Mishnah, but there's shloshim pinkasim. There were different kinds of it. Actually, tzarid and shish were basically shiva. A typical one was you would put a coating of wax on it, and then you'd scratch out letters in the wax. That's what we're talking about over here.
Coating of wax on a board.
It was actually like a folding board. It would be shaped sort of like a book. Like a book or like a series of pages, you'd coat the sides of them with wax, you'd scratch out letters on the wax, and later on, once you're done with it, you'd use those kind of things for temporary records or whatever, and then afterwards you'd melt off the wax or rub it smooth or whatever and reuse it, yeah. So if an Eved goes out free using a shtar shichur that was written on a tabla or on a pinkas, yotze l'chayrus, then that's valid, he goes free. But not if he has writing that's on a that not if he has writing on a on a on a on a on a what's a keeper is a no a keeper no a head covering. Rashi describes it as sort of well. Rashi describes it as a woolen hat that women wear under their tichel. So if you have writing on that. Andruchtri, or you have Rashi explains that andruchtri is a tachshit, it's an ornament where they embroider words or designs on it. So if you have words embroidered on this kippur, on this andruchtri, then that's not a valid shtar shichur. And Rashi explains the reason is because you only have basically with embroidery like that, you only have the two ends of the thread. Are embedded into what it's written on in the kippur and in the andruchtri. The rest of it is all free. You see sometimes when you have something embroidered and you pull out one end, then the whole thing starts coming out. Which brings some rishonim, I believe, that Ashba says that in that case, if it was embroidered, a proper embroidery, where it really is embedded into the thing, maybe it would be kosher. On the other hand, the Aruch has a different explanation of andruchtri, that it does mean, he says it's sort of like the carpets that you find sometimes in Arab countries where they have woven into the carpet design are letters, Arabic letters or whatever. But even that would be possible, we're saying. Anyway, so you see from that, though, that writing on a pinkas, even though it's engraved in the wax, is kosher. So why are you telling me with the case of a get it would be possible? It depends. What are you engraving? When you engrave letters, there's two ways you can do it. You can have the material, the flat material, and you're engraving into it the actual shapes of the letters themselves. That's called chak yereches, that you're engraving the yereches, the legs and the other parts of the letters. Bruce says chak toichos.
That's inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus chak yirechos would be you engraving around the letter and leaving the letter itself sticking up from the material. You're cutting away. You're cutting away everything. You're cutting away everything around. You trace out, let's say, the shape of an aleph. Then you cut out everything on this side. Everything on this side. Everything on. And what you're left with is a raised thing in the shape of an aleph.
What? An embossing.
It's sort of embossing. Yeah. Embossing though would imply that you're actually pressing it out. That's the most ideal with soon. But it sticks out. Yeah. Chak tochos is a problem because that's not considered writing. You haven't written the aleph over there. You removed everything that's not the aleph. As opposed to chak yirechos, when you're actually scratching out the aleph and the wax or the wood over there, fine. That's fine. The question is, the tochos lois, you're telling me if you scratch out, you're telling me that if you engrave the insides of the letters, meaning you cut out what's around the letter and leave the letter sticking out, that's a problem. That's not considered writing. Or a minu, I have a contradiction. In the case of the tzitz, it says, loy ha'yuk shaleya shekeya, the writing on the tzitz was not engraved below the surface, elef boilet, but it stuck out, kidinuei zahav, like on a gold dinner. Now, while dinuei zahav teichetein. Now, when a gold dinner is minted, so what happens? How do they mint coins? So Rashi describes, you take a die, you take a that has the design of the coin on it, you put it on top of the blank piece of metal, you start hammering, nowadays they do it with machinery, but whatever, it's the same principle, and the letter comes out. So what do you have now? Rashi explains that when you think about it, when you have a planchet, a blank that goes into the press over there, what do you have? At the end, the design is the height of the design is the height of the original blank coin. What you have is what's around the design has been sunken in by the pressure of the die. That's chak toichos. Where you're not engraving out the letter. In other words, you're pushing down the metal around what's supposed to be the letter, and therefore the letter winds up sticking out. And we're saying the tzitz was done that way. So therefore, that so
sabe. You push the metal, engraving in the surface. Inside the surface.
Meaning, yes, no, not inside the surface. Meaning, in other words, like this. If you have, for example, this is the surface of the coin.
Right.
After the coin is minted, it's not that, for example, the blank parts of the coin are here and the design of the coin is here. It's the other way around. The design of the coin goes only up till here. The blank parts of the coin are below the original surface, so they were pushed down by the die. That's chaktos. And we see that the tzitz was made that way, and it's kosher. That's considered writing. The answer is no. What we mean is, the answer is, no, what we mean is, the tzitz was made in certain ways, it was like a gold coin, but in certain other ways, not. Kidinuei zahav the boilet. It's like a gold coin in the sense that the letters stick out. But it's not like a gold coin. Because in the case of a coin, yes, it's chak toichos. The metal around the letters is pushed down. The field of the coin is pushed down, and the letters stick out. And the letters are left sticking out at the original height. With the tzitz, it wasn't like that. What did they do with the tzitz? So Rashi explains that what they did is they would turn the tzitz over. They'd go to the back of it. They would punch out on the back of it, or engrave out on the back of it letters, and therefore they come out sticking out the other side. The Rambam writes that they would take the tzitz and put it
in.
Well, so, right, so the Rambam describes similarly.
Exactly.
Fine, so that's embossing, that's what we're saying, that's kosher. But in the case of a coin, it's not embossed like that. A coin is made by pressing down a die on it. So therefore, it's kedinuei zahav in the sense that it's embossed, in the sense that it sticks out, but it's made by a different process than coins are.
It's made when you have a flat piece
of gold or silver or whatever, yeah.
And you have a mold that's carved in.
Yes, but the point is that the Gemara can actually re-deal with this in a second. But right now what we're assuming is that the design on the coin ends up the highest points of the design on the coin are only as high as the original surface of the metal.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have any right now. We don't have any coins with us. It's Shabbos, but whatever. But that's the Gemara's initial assumption.
Clearly, you see that it's sticking out. On our coin.
No, you don't. If you look carefully, sometime you'll notice that the field of the coin goes in a little bit. No, wait. Okay. Anyway, in the case of the tzitz, so Rashi and the Rambam says similarly, that the Rambam says they would take the tzitz, they put it on a wax surface, so that the wax can be pliable enough, flexible enough to they'd hammer out or whatever, engrave out the letters on the back of the tzitz, and then therefore they come out sticking out on the front. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos says that that can't be considered writing because you're not writing. You're writing backwards over there. You're not writing Kodesh Lashem. You're writing a backwards course, a backwards dalet, etc. So therefore, Tosfos explains differently. Tosfos explains what they would have to do is they work from the front of the tzitz. You take like pliers and you pull out part of the gold from the front to make the letter kof and to make the letter dalet, etc. And that's writing.
So writing really has to be on the side, on the same side.
No, according to Tosfos, yes. According to Rashi, not. But according to Rashi, not. But even because according to Rashi, you could be writing on the reverse and it comes out sticking on the front. But that's acceptable. But it has to be that you're writing the actual letters, not like in the case of a coin, not like in the case of what the Gemara is now assuming happens with a coin, where, for example, where you have that again, where you have that the letters remain at the height of the original, where the letters remain at the original height of the blank of the blank. And the field, the blank parts of the coin are sunken in compared to the original. Yes.
That's not considered tefillah.
That's not considered. That's what I'm saying. That's chaktosis. That you're engraving out the insides of the letters. This is
the insides of letters or the outside?
The inside. Well, whatever. Meaning the area around the letters.
But the outside is
this. It doesn't matter. Insides, outsides, whatever. Not the body of the letter itself. This is relevant in Hilchot Safaris also. In Hilchot Safaris, you have, for example, let's say a sofer, let's say drops a drop of ink on the parchment, and then he were to carve out of it. He cuts all he scrapes away the top of it. He scrapes away the bottom. He scrapes away the sides or whatever, and he winds up with a letter. That's possible. He hasn't written the letter. He scraped away the other parts that are not the letter.
And that's the reason is because when the ink drops. There was really no kavana in
the... Never mind kavana. The point is that he didn't write a letter. The point is he didn't write a letter. He created the letter by carving away what's not the letter. That's called chaktosis. It's called exactly that, chaktosis. Yeah.
How do you say it in English?
So I don't know what the rest... There's a one word for it in English, but whatever. It means cutting away what's not the letter. Creating a letter from, I guess you could say, maybe creating it in a negative space, basically. I don't know, whatever. Relief is more like what we're talking about. Okay, fine. Okay. Amalir Ravina Laravashi. Roshma. Now let's have to deal with this question. When you have a die that's used to make a coin, Michritz, Choritz, and Pnufi Michnis. What is it? Is it that the die is pushing down the metal around the letters or designs or whatever on the coin, and therefore that would be Chaktoichis? Michritz, Choritz. Is it like carved in? Meaning, in other words, again, you have the design sticking out. Is it they're sticking out?
Not initially, afterwards.
After you coin it. But is it that they're sticking out because the die has pushed down the area around them, or knufi michnif, or is it that when the or is it that the die forces the metal into the spaces in the die that have the designs? Remember, the die has them in reverse. And therefore it's pushing the metal into them, in which case that could be considered writing.
Are the letters pushed out, or is the area surrounding
them? Or is the area surrounding them pushed in, basically, yeah, that's better. Omele michra tzchorit, so he says, it pushes down the area around them. The letters are not created by themselves, and therefore it would be possible as writing.
That's called
the chaktochet, and here we're calling it michra tzchorit, it's engraved.
Engravement is real chakika.
Fine, okay, michra tzchorit, whatever, yeah. If you look in Rashi, chorts in v'doichik in toichos as vivis rotzuras adina, it scratches out and it pushes down the surrounding area around the design. Yeah. So we ask them a question. Same brayso that we just quoted. The writing on the tzitz was not below the surface. Was not engraved. Ela boilet, it was sticking out. Kedin resolve like a gold dinner. Wait, we don't know yet. The isakudat of michrit chorit. If you're going to say that a die pushes down the metal around the design, hover in michta velasa. But in the case of the tzitz, it says the pasuk says it has to be written, and you don't have writing in that case. And the answer is like before, kedin resolve like kedin resolve. We mean that the writing on the tzitz in one way was like a gold dinner, in one way not. It's like a gold dinner in the sense that the letters stick out, just like on a gold dinner the letters stick out. Because over there, because when it comes to when it comes to a gold, when it comes to a gold dinner, it's created migavoi from the inside, meaning the lettering is created by pressure. No, by pressure on the same side where the letters come out. You're pushing down the metal around the letters, and therefore the letters wind up sticking out. At Vahacha Ma'avroi, whereas when it comes to the tit, it's done from the outside, meaning, like we said before, that Rashi and the Rambam says you turn it over and punch out the letters from the other side, and therefore they come out sticking out. Yeah.
So that's
the difference. That's kosher. Yeah. Incidentally, this gets into a bit of a discussion among the Achronim about the kashrus of printing, as far as Gittin, as far as Sifrei Torah, etc., based on what the Gemara is saying over here. How does all this relate to printing? So there are Achronim who say that actually printing is considered writing based on all of this. You have the letters are pressed against the letters on the dies, on the typefaces are pressed against the parchment or paper or what have you. They create letters. Fine, that's chakireches on the face of it. You're creating the actual letters. You're not scraping away anything on the parchment or the paper to create the letters. Therefore, it should be kosher. You're pressing in. You're pressing letters on the. Therefore, it should be kosher. So you have
Chakireches is
kosher, yeah. So therefore, the argument is
pressing in the outside of the letters.
It means that you Chakireches, and the way the Gemara is talking about over here is you're engraving the letters into the medium. With printing, you're not engraving them in, but you're pressing ink down onto the paper. So that should be kosher.
Chakireches is what exactly? It's pushing it the
means,
outside of the letter in.
Chakireches would mean that you actually take it. Yeah, it means that you're actually just scraping into the. Thing over here, you're scraping in an aleph, a bay, etc.
Scraping it in.
Yeah.
That's engraving,
yeah.
You make a line inside the base.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so you have some achronim who talk about the idea that printing might indeed be kosher for Gittin and Sifrei Torah and whatnot. Yeah.
You don't engrave when you.
Yeah, but the argument is based on what the Gemara is saying over here. It's not chakireches because you're not removing any ink from the paper. Just the opposite. You're putting ink on the press. You're putting ink on the press and then transferring it to the paper. It should be fine. You have other achronim who argue that maybe in the case of Gittin it would be valid, but in the case of Sifrei Torah or not. And then you have others who argue that even with Gittin it could be a problem because you still need it written l'shmoy, and then this is not considered writing. Maybe this still isn't considered writing because writing implies that you actually take a pen and apply the ink to the paper, not just that you press it down on it. And then on top of that, also they talk about. I mean, certainly nowadays when you have printing by machinery or whatever, there's really no question it can't be considered written writing.
Based on this Gemara, it seems that the press was invented way before the medieval times. I mean, they had the understanding in the Gemara.
They may have had the understanding. They had the understanding, but nobody had made an actual press in those times.
It's clear there.
But they're not actually. Nobody had thought of putting all these things together, ink and a press and whatever. They didn't have. How if I they did? We would have a lot more Spartan that have gotten lost during the Middle Ages. But
No, they had in China. You say you engrave it in a wood, a piece of wood. That's exactly what the press is. You engrave it in a piece of wood.
No, a press requires that you have separate. They have typefaces and you have ink and you have whatever. But they did. They didn't have it. No. Let's try to finish to the end of the daf over here. It's getting late. What if the husband writes to get for his wife on a sheet of gold? He says to her, here, take your get, and along with it, here's your ksuba. The gold will pay off your ksuba. Mahu, what's the din? Is that considered valid or not? Yes, she's received her get, and she's received her ksuba. Meaning, in other words, you can have one giving over there which accomplishes two things. It accomplishes the giving of the get, and also accomplishes the giving of the ksuba. So Rav asked him, but I have a braisa that says, if a husband says to his wife, if he says to her, here's your get, and the remainder, the unwritten part of the parchment, let's say, is towards paying your ksuba, then fine, she's received her get, and the unwritten part of it goes towards the ksuba. Time of the ikashar, which implies only if there's a remainder over there that's not written on. Halekashar is like. So it implies if there's no remainder, then no good.
There's no remainder meaning what?
Meaning that he took the entire, he filled up the entire piece of parchment with the words of the get. Then it's no good. You can't say that there's some part of it that's left to pay for ksuba, because you need all that parchment for the actual get. So then in that case over here, when we're talking about over here, he wrote the get on a sheet of gold. If the get fills up the whole sheet of gold, how can he say that miskabla ksubasa?
Well, you can fit it.
No, it doesn't. The point is,
if the sheet of love is thick enough, you can thin it.
But that's not what. No, it's the same way with the parchment. I mean, you could argue you could cut the parchment thinner or thinner, but you don't do that. I mean, the answer is who didn't ask about the lekashar. Actually, Rav Nachman says that no, the same din would apply even if there's no remainder. What the point of the bride is, afagab the ikashar, even if there is a remainder, so he wrote the get on half a sheet, for example, and the other half is blank, only if he explicitly told her that this other half I'm giving you as part of your ksuba, then that works. But if not, then not. My time avir the megillah, because otherwise we would say that this remaining part is just the space around the megillah, it's just the borders, the margins. It has no significance of its own. But if he explicitly tells her, I'm giving this to you to pay for your ksuba, then fine. But if not, then not. Same thing with the gold sheet then. The gold sheet itself can be worth the value of the ksuba, and that's fine. But he has to tell her that I'm giving it to you as your ksuba. Otherwise, it just counts as a gift and does not count as a ksuba.
Even if there's no remainder.
That's what we're saying, yeah. Turn it up on him. I raise a gittich on Yerushalayim. If a husband says to his wife, here's your get, but the paper belongs to me, ain't him a gerushas, then she's not divorced. Meaning, so Rashi says the reason is because if he says I still own the paper, it means so what are the letters written on? He's giving her letters without paper. No, that's not a get. The Rambam gives a different reason. The Rambam says the reason is because the get has to be Christmas. It has to be a total cutoff between the husband and the wife. If he still owns the paper, then that's not Christmas. However, if he says to her, here's your get, on condition that you return me the paper afterwards, then she's divorced. She has to give it back to her afterwards, so to him afterwards. It's fine. Matan Amanas Master, like we do every year at Sukkot. So he's giving it to her as a present.
So she gives it after she gives it back.
Yeah, because only then the Tanai is fulfilled, yeah. The same way as when we do every Sukkot, with a little bit after every day, you know. Boira Papa, then shita l'shita ben teva l'teva mai. What about if he says, he's not saying that all the paper of the get belongs to me. What if he says the part of it between one line and the next, or between one word and the next, belongs to me? My, then what do we say? Now, what are we talking about? Are we talking about over here that the Rashi says that we're... So, fine, but... okay. So... Rashi seems to be saying that he's talking about that these are two different possibilities. One is he says that I want the space between every line to belong to me. Number two is he says, never mind the space between the lines, but I want the spaces between the words to belong to me. The other way of looking at it, Rabbi Hananel's explanation is that it's talking about both. He's saying the space between the words and between the lines. Okay.
Well, she has to give it back to him? Or?
No, he's saying that belongs to me.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the question. So Gemara is saying teku. The question is, but typically, why do we need to say teku?
Right.
Because we're not sure. Shouldn't we have another reason to say automatically that's possible? The sefer echad omer achmanav leshnayim or shloisha svarim, because the Torah says the get has to be one sefer, one document, not two or three. If you were to say that the spaces between the lines and between the words belong to the husband, effectively what you have is you have a bunch of small pieces over here that are being... Now, right now it's one physical piece of paper, but it's destined to be cut up because...
Well, he did the answer we gave before.
That what?
Since the paper belongs to me, she's...
Because this is different. The paper that the letters are written on actually belongs to him, therefore it's not OECS purpose. It's not letters flying in the air. But he's saying the space between the lines, for example, that's not written on. We're saying paper. The question is, wouldn't we say there's a problem with such a get in itself? If he were to give her the get as 12 strips, each one with one line written on it, it would be possible. So in this case, he's giving her effectively 12 strips because he's saying the space between each line is mine. So why would we even think that's kosher? Why do we have to say teku? Or, again, it depends whether we're talking about that these are two different questions or one question. If we're saying it's one big question, ben shittel sheita u ben teva l'teva, then what it means is that... the number of words in the get is the number of documents he's giving her, as opposed to, for example, if you could have, for example, where he's saying, let's say, the spaces between the words belong to me, well, then fine, you'll have a get that's full of holes in it, but it'll still be one piece.
I can understand she wants to.
No, come on, these are theoretical cases, but no, come on, no. So therefore, at least in the case when he says every line, between every line belongs to me, then it comes out Shnayim or Shlosha Svarim. The answer is, well, tzricha de ma'ura. Fine, but you could be talking about a case where everything is attached, which means Rashi says that you make the letters long, so they reach from one line to another, so therefore there's no space between lines to be cut off. And similarly also with the word, you have, let's say, that you have the end of each word touches the beginning of the next word, let's say, which leads one opinion to say that in that case, we know in a Sefer Torah and Tefillin and Mezuzah, each letter has to be completely surrounded by parchment. Evidently, in a get, not like that, because we're saying that you could have a case where it's not. However, the Ri says in Tosfos, not necessarily, because Ma'ura over here could mean, for example, let's say you have on one line with a Langerhof, you make the end of Langerhof stick down into the space, let's say, of a test underneath. So it's Ma'ura in the sense you can't cut upon, not touches, but it goes into the space of it. It goes into the space of it. So therefore, there's no way you can cut between the lines without destroying some of the letters, but nevertheless, I'm not actually touching.
And I'll do that for all letters.
Wherever possible. As a matter of fact, actually, the minhag is, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, and this is how it's done in Gittin nowadays, that yes, to a certain extent, what they do in Gittin is they make the letters of one line extend downward almost to touch the ones from the line below it.
So doing it in a
sense? No, inside, because inside can be a problem with halacha, but at least close to it. Kivatama means that the letters have to be completely surrounded by parchment. In a get, you don't need that. We are careful with a get, nevertheless, that letters shouldn't touch. But we do try to make that they come close to touching in order to avoid this potential issue where you have spaces between. It's not just because of this potential issue. It's very rare that a husband should say, "I want to keep the strips of parchment between the lines." But you have other possibilities. What if somebody adds extra words between the lines? But to avoid that kind of thing, they make the lines. They make the letters. That's the thing. Well, that's the point. If there's no space between the letters, if there's no space between them, it will be safer echad. If you were to cut out these small areas, then it would still be safer echad, or it would be a safer echad that has a bunch of holes in it. So therefore, that wouldn't prevent it from being possible. That wouldn't make it possible on those grounds. Is it still the problem of krisus that we said before? That's why the Gemara is saying take it.
There is something to cut out?
Yeah, in other words, according to this, there would still be something to cut out, it just wouldn't be something that would make it into a bunch of separate strips of paper. Now let's go to, our Mishnah told us that if a get is written on the hand of an Eved, it's kosher. You just have to give the whole Eved to her. Suppose we know there was a chazaka on a certain Eved that belongs to the husband, the get kosher al yodeh, now there's a get written on this slave's hand, and now this get is in her possession. So she, not the get, this Eved is in her possession. So she brings the Eved in front of us. She says, my husband gave me the Eved, and along with it, the get. Mao, what's the din? Is that considered valid or not? Do we say that, now Rashi says, we're talking about there's no Eidim Asir over here. There's no Eidim that the get is handed over. So now, though the Eved is in order shoes, does that mean, can we assume the husband actually handed him over? Or maybe not. Maybe the Eved walked over on his own. And then, therefore, that wouldn't be a valid get. So the get has to be given from the husband to the wife. So, me Amrina Naknuya Akhnila, do we say that the husband was Makna her the Eved? Or Duma, who Minasha Ayah, or maybe the Eved just walked in on his own? But typically, the Chsab Tiyachal is Daifu. Never mind that, Rabba says. If you have the get written on an aide's hand, that can easily be falsified. Because, for example, Rashi says, we're not going to assume that she will have written the whole get on her own. That's, we learned before that a chazaka, a woman is not going to have the chutzpah to say to her husband, you divorced me, when really he did. But what if, Rashi says, for example, there was a tznai written in the skin, and she erased the part that had the tznai, it's on skin, it's easy to erase. And then, therefore, what you see there, the remainder there, appears to be a fully valid get without any tanayim, and we don't know. Okay. So then based on that, Rav is saying, never mind the question whether he gave her the Eved or whether the Eved walked over on his own. It can't be a kosher get anyway.
Right. No handwriting on a hand.
Now, the question is, will Rav Akasha Masnissin al-Ayad Shal Eved? What does Rav do with our Mishnah that said that he wrote the get on an Eved's hand? So, Bishnaim and Masnith and the Rava Lakasha. But actually, the Mishnah wouldn't be so hard for Rava to explain because the Eidim Asira, the Rava Lazari, because our Mishnah could be talking about that there were Eidim Asira, and therefore it could be like Rava Lazari, Eidim Asira Kauti, they're the important thing. As long as at the time when the get, as long as at the time when the get was given, there were Eidim and they didn't see any Tanoim, then fine, we can accept it on that basis. But you have the problem, according to Rami Bachama, he's saying that there were no Eidim Asira, or at least the Eidim Asira are not available, or whatever. So what's his question then? Then Rava has a point. If Ksav Shiyachal is die, if it could easily be falsified. The answer is, Rami Bachama, Nami Lekasha, Bichsevis Kaka. You know what? According to Rami Bachama, it's not a problem either, because we could be talking about not that it's written on his skin, but it's tattooed on his skin. That's not Yochel Izayah. So if it was tattooed, there's nothing can be removed. So then we know what's written there now is it has to, there can't be anything missing from what was written before. Now, Tosfos asks the obvious question. That's also a deraisa. You're not allowed to tattoo. So Tosfos answers that. So there are some approaches we'll say we could know. So Tosfos takes it as a given that Tosfos doesn't say other approaches take it as a given that that din applies even to Eid to Avodim Kananim because they are chayiv in mitzvahs, in certain mitzvahs. However, there are Mephoroshim who say we could be talking about an Eved who never had Milo or Tevila. Therefore, he's not considered an Eved Kanani, he's considered a full-fledged Goy. So then maybe the issue of service Kaka doesn't apply to him. Tosfos gives other possibilities that Midrash Rai says it's only a problem if you actually tattoo it. So therefore, we could be talking about over here, let's say that you just scratched it into his skin without using any ink. Tosfos quotes that Shimon says that actually the issue midaraisa of tattooing is only if you tattoo a name of the Eivishter on you, the issue of tattooing is deraisa. But Reb Shimon says in Makkos, where the Gemara discusses this issue, that midaraisa you only chayev if you tattoo a name of a Avodah Zarah. So therefore, this isn't the name of a Avodah Zarah, this is a get. According to Reb Shimon, there's no problem with it, deraisa. So this question can. So Reb Shimon learns it from the Pesukim over there, because it says, "Seves kaka lezitim acham ani Hashem." You're not allowed to make a tattoo on yourself because I am Hashem. It isn't Pashas Kedushim. You still have the problem that's Midrabanan, okay, but nevertheless, Tosfos says, okay, it may have been done by Issur, but it'll still be a valid get. But again, you have other Mephoroshim who talk about the idea that maybe this slave over here is a full-fledged guy, therefore maybe the Issur doesn't apply. So actually, now if we come to that conclusion and we say that it can be talking about tattooing, so in that case, you don't have a problem with the Mishnah according to Rava either, because the service kaka. Because again, you could say that the Mishnah is talking about Zafka if it was done by a tattoo. So then, therefore, so it doesn't matter whether it's Eidim Asira or not for our purpose. No, because a get has to be written by a Jew, and necessarily a Jew will have had to do the tattooing.
The first 12 lines.
Well, yeah, that's what we said. The get has to be. Yeah, we said that the get has to be written. We said in the first paragraph that yeah. Because that's the thing. If there's tattooing, then you don't need Eidim Asira specifically. Even if the Eidim Asira aren't available, we know that what's tattooed there, she can't remove anything that was there. She can't remove the Tanai, for example, that was there. Whereas if it was just written on a skin and ink, then that's different. Yeah. My Havia law, what's the bottom line as far as the original question, whether this is a valid, leaving aside the question of tattooing versus writing, we still have the original question, can we say this Eved was given to her by the husband, or did he just walk over by himself? Toshma, come, let's prove from Domer Rish Lakish, that Rish Lakish says in Bava Basra, Hagoydreis Elan Chazaka. Goydreis means animals that move around freely, and therefore it applies also to Tavadim, or also able to move around freely. There's no Chazaka. If you have them in your possession, you can't say that you have an Eved or an animal in your possession. You can't say, somebody else comes and says, this was mine. You can't say, well, you sold it to me. You don't have any proof because it just walked over by itself. Tosfos points out if you have it for 3 years, that is a chazaka, but that's not what we're dealing with over here. So that's it. Which is less than 3 years, that's the point. So therefore, no, you can't assume that this Eved was given to her. You may have to assume that he walked over on his own. And in that case, at best, you'd have a suffix guess. It certainly wouldn't be a vata guess then. And that's Taka Dalach, yeah. Actually, there are Mephoshim. I should mention there are actually Mephoshim. Tosfos deals with it a little bit over here. Does this din apply then to animals as well? Yeah, well, the Rish Lakish, the original din applies to animals. But in this case, would we say, for example, that if the get was written on the horn of a cow, let's say, like we talked about in our Mishnah, and then the cow is in her possession, could we say the same kind of thing, that maybe the cow walked over on its own, or maybe not? Avodim have das. They're more likely to walk on their own than cows. They could, but not necessarily. It's less likely, maybe it's less likely that the cow will just randomly walked over to her on its own rather than at the end. Well,
So meaning what?
The meaning of it, there might be more reason. So we're saying over here, in the case of an Ebed, you can't consider a valid get because he may have walked over on his own. Maybe in the case of a cow, not so. Maybe that would be considered a valid get.
Okay.